This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Vultures. In the Bible, they were called an abomination. Charles Darwin described the turkey vulture as a disgusting bird with its bald, scarlet head formed to wallow in putridity. In art and literature, vultures are always the harbingers of imminent demise. Nature writer Wayne Grady points all this out in the beginning of his new book, but he spends the rest of the book trying to undo the bad press vultures have received. His new book is called Vulture, Nature's Ghastly Gourmet. It's filled with information that is as fascinating as it is unappetizing. I ask Grady first about the place of the vulture in mythology.
Historically, it's occupied a very important part in Native American and Canadian mythology. It's a large bird, and most large animals are celebrated in mythology. And the California condor is a prototype for the thunderbird image in West Coast Native mythology. In Europe, certainly, and in India, the bird has been is in a lot of the early mythology of India. They're known as the gatekeepers of hell because they, for obvious reasons, I guess. I mean, they deal with death and dead things, and so it's natural to associate them with death and hell. In India, for the past 1,500 years or more, there's been a regular ritual ceremony in which dead bodies are exposed on mountaintops to vultures who come and eat them. It's called a sky burial. It's a rather gruesome ritual, but it's been part of the mythology for centuries.
I'm going to stop you right there. I don't know if you saw the movie Kundun, the Martin Scorsese movie,
yes,
about the Dalai Lama, but there's a scene at a Tibetan monastery,
mm-hmm,
in which one of the monks dies, and the monk is basically, his body is basically chopped up into smaller pieces and left for the vultures to eat.
Yes, that's the sky burial, and that takes place still today. I mean, it happens every day but Sunday, apparently. And the bodies are chopped up and ground up into small pieces. The bones are broken up and mixed with yak milk, I think, so that every part of the body is consumed by hordes of vultures that come down and hang around the area for that particular purpose.
Is that a way? What is the point of that sky burial?
I think the two things. I mean, there's the philosophical point, which is sort of becoming one with nature when you die. It's exactly the same as being buried in North America or Europe. You know, the body is decomposed and made to become one with the earth, in this case with a creature of the earth. But the practical, I think, application in Tibet is that there's no soil up there. There aren't 6 feet of soil at the top of the mountaintops, so that it's a way of disposing of corpses without causing disease.
Vultures eat putrid, decaying corpses that no other animal would go near. I mean, other animals would get sick if they ate this. How come vultures don't get sick when they eat putrid corpses?
Well, they have some kind of, I don't really know the science of this, but they have some kind of special juices in their intestinal tract that kills bacteria. They're actually, I think people should be studying whatever it is inside a vulture that kills things like anthrax, for example. There's a lot of talk about anthrax in the news these days, and weapons-grade anthrax. There isn't any real antidote to anthrax. If a human comes down with that disease, there aren't too many things you can take to counteract the bacterial infection, but somehow the vulture has something in its gut that kills anthrax, and we should probably be taking a look at it. Yeah.
This kind of gives them the edge, huh, when it comes to getting food.
Well,
because they don't have a lot of competition in eating this stuff.
Well, that's right. There's a real niche there for them. A lot of things do eat dead animals, but there aren't very many things that eat exclusively dead animals. For a vulture, the deader the better. And they have to have some kind of internal system for eating that stuff without getting sick.
Would you describe how the vulture is physically designed to be able to eat dead animals?
Well, the most obvious thing is the naked head and neck. One of the species, the turkey vulture, is so called because it, like a turkey or like a flamingo, it has no feathers on its neck or on its head. makes it look kind of weird as a bird. We're used to seeing birds covered all over in feathers, but vultures have no feathers from the shoulder up, and that's an adaptation to the kinds of the way they eat. I mean, they stick their heads into rather horrible places, and they can sort of pull their heads out without bringing a lot of gore and stuff attached to their feathers. And we mentioned the stomach juices that are able to digest bacteria. Their feet are not adapted to grasping. As for a long time, vultures were thought to be members of the same family as hawks and owls and eagles and things. But unlike those other raptors, vultures cannot grasp onto a carcass and fly off with it. Their feet are particularly useful for tearing and rending, but not for carrying. So they have to stay pretty much where the carcass is, where they find the carcass. They don't take it home with them as other raptors do.
Is it coincidence that some of them are colored like blood and guts?
Yes, it's probably coincidence. The coloration is probably more for sexual display than to remind them of what they eat.
Kind of sex and violence thing here.
Yeah, yeah. The most colorful, the king vulture is the most colorful of the vultures, and it is extraordinarily beautifully colored. The red eye ring and the blue and yellow on the head, they're quite pretty.
Now, it's fascinating to read that vultures have no voice box, so this is a bird without a song.
It's a bird without a song, and a bird with a sense of smell. So the two unusual bird-like qualities there. Yeah, they don't have a voice box. They can click at one another, and they do that during the mating ritual. But they don't squawk or cry or sing or anything like that other birds do.
How do vultures find the dead and dying corpses that they feed on?
Well, two things. Turkey vultures and greater yellow-headed vultures have a sense of smell, and they're one of the very few, probably two or three other species of birds in the bird kingdom have a sense of smell, and very, very highly developed. A turkey vulture can smell a rotting corpse from 1,000 feet in the air. And they sort of cruise in the forests, in the forest canopy, and in the open savannas, waiting to sort of catch a whiff of something. In fact, I read somewhere that natural gas line repairmen look for circling turkey vultures over a part of the territory where they know that there's a leak in the gas line, and because natural gas smells like rotting food. Turkey vultures are often fooled by a gas leak, so line repairmen will look for circling vultures to tell them where there's a possible leak in the line. And other vultures who have not developed a sense of smell will follow the turkey vultures or the yellow-headed vultures to a corpse. So you might sometimes get a situation where there's sort of three different species of vultures circling over an area. Two of the species watching the turkey vulture to come down, and then as soon as they see a turkey vulture go down, they'll go down and sort of bump the turkey vulture off the carcass and take over. There's a very strict hierarchy of feeding in vulture land, and turkey vultures are pretty close to the bottom.
Do you find vultures beautiful?
Oh yeah, I do. I didn't when I started working on this book. I must confess, I was not one of the vultures' big fans until I really sort of got to know from reading and talking to researchers and observing myself, got to know that they were actually a very interesting bird, very unique, have unique problems and have found unique solutions to the problems. I find them sort of, I guess, intellectually beautiful. Some of them are actually quite physically beautiful. I mentioned the king vulture earlier. The turkey vulture with its bright red head and neck is quite nice looking too. I quite like birds. I'm an amateur birder and spend a lot of time watching birds, and if you spend any time at all watching vultures in the air, particularly, you have to admit that they're an absolute beautiful animal to watch. The way they circle on the airwaves, you know, the warm air thermals, they just glide. And they can glide up there for hours with hardly ever moving a wing to propel themselves. They just sort of ride those thermals. They have extraordinarily large wingspan for the body weight, so they can hang glide for literally hours and hours, traveling hundreds and hundreds of kilometers with maybe flapping their wings two or three times.
We're going to hear from one of the people who's tried to save the California condor. Yeah. And before we hear from him, I want to thank you very much, Wayne Grady, for talking with us.
Well, thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Wayne Grady is the author of Vulture, Nature's Ghastly Gourmet. We'll talk with the Los Angeles Zoo's vulture expert after a break. This is Fresh Air.